This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by Primary Residential Mortgage, PRMI, PugetSound.com. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
So tomorrow morning around 8:15 a.m. or so, our time, Congresswoman Cori Bush of Missouri, she is a member of the squad, and Congresswoman Bonnie Watson Coleman, Democrat from New Jersey, they will be introducing a bill that federally will decriminalize drugs, all drugs. Now, the bill hasn't actually been released. They'll give us the details tomorrow. Generally speaking, the way this goes is that they will decriminalize for, quote unquote, personal possession of an illicit substance. And the amount varies from drug to drug. But generally speaking, they say this is what a reasonable person would have on them if they weren't selling, if they weren't a drug dealer. This is part of an ongoing push by extremists within the Democratic Party and more specifically the progressive wing of the Democratic Party as they try to fundamentally change the fabric of this country. It will destroy communities, but they don't care about the unintended consequences of this because they say we should not be criminalizing drug addiction. And I generally agree. We shouldn't be criminalizing drug addicts. Although when addicts break the law and we allow them to be put in a position where they feel comfortable breaking a law, probably should step in. We already know that this is going to hurt the country if it were to pass, because we live in a state, we really live in a region in which drug decriminalization is already here. We've already been doing it. The experiment is not going so well, guys. Both Washington State and Oregon have seen surges in drug overdoses, particularly fentanyl, which is incredibly deadly, and meth, at least in Washington State and King County. We're seeing these numbers continue to rise, people continuing to die. And instead of pushing away from this drug culture, what do? We keep embracing it. Here's a needle. Here's a booty bumping kit. Because we don't want to decriminalize addiction. But what's happening as a result of what it is we're doing? We've seen the Mexican drug cartels pushing their products into the Pacific Northwest. Just last week, Christopher Wray, the FBI director, made mention of both crime and drugs coming over the border.
There's no question that the cartel activity on the other side of the border is spilling over in all sorts of ways, and you just put your finger directly on one that is extremely concerning to us all.
As they ship their product into the Pacific Northwest, and again, a lot of it is fentanyl at this point because fentanyl is so easy to transport. You just put a bunch of pills in a backpack, and you can have thousands and thousands and thousands of those pills. As that's happening, drug dealers go out there and sell with impunity. They know they're not going to get arrested. They know what the rules are. Every once in a while, after months and months and months of police work, there's some major drug bust, and sometimes a minor one. But for the most part, drug dealers are out there. They're carrying smaller amounts because they don't want to go further than the personal possession amount. And they're selling it. They're selling it to addicts. Addicts that officers could go up to, especially as they're coming down from that high, and use jail time as leverage for the addict to turn on their drug dealer. Do you want to sober up in jail? Because it's Friday. You're not going to be seen by a judge until Monday. Do you want to do that, or do you want to just tell me who sold you this fentanyl or meth or heroin or coke, whatever it happens to be? They can't do that anymore because the addict knows that they're not going to go to jail. And when you don't have any punishment on the table, meaningful punishment, think about the impact that has, particularly on kids, but really anyone who might now be a little bit more willing to try it out. Because what's one thing that is still being sold, even though it's legalized in Washington State? What's being sold, even though it's legalized right now in Washington State? Say weed.
Weed, Jason.
Weed. On a lot of people who are buying the weed, some of them are adults because they can get it cheaper on the black market, but a lot of them are kids. Not 7-year-olds, but like 16, 17, 18. Young kids are buying weed. And then all of a sudden, because they know nothing's really going to happen if they were to get caught, well, that drug dealer starts pushing on them something else. Why don't you try Oxy? All the kids are doing it now. You'll feel great with OxyContin. Just one pill, you'll feel fine. Except that OxyContin pill is actually laced with fentanyl, and the kid ends up overdosing and dying. There are all these unintended consequences, all because we have decided to just step back and say, we're not going to criminalize addiction, which sounds really, really good and compassionate on paper, except it's not compassionate. It leads to more deaths. It leads to more broken families and ruined lives. And it keeps people on that path for much longer than they otherwise would be. Now, will this go anywhere? Probably not. Not yet, federally. Will it get a big push? Yeah. Yeah, and I guarantee you that a good portion of the Washington delegation from the Democratic side will be backing this. So we'll be paying close attention when it's unveiled tomorrow, which also I'm going to be on Fox News tomorrow morning in the 8 o'clock hour probably talking about this, but we'll see.
Have you ever been on Fox News before?
A few times.
Oh, good. So this will be no problem for
you. I've been on 2/12 times pi divided times 0 plus 3 divided by x emoji 177 times tomorrow.
But who's counting?
Who's not me? I just did the math in my head real quickly. I don't know all this thing. I just did it all in my head. Push the button.
What's trending? Technology.
So there's a new app called Treadmap. It's for hikers who want to avoid crowds out on the trails in Washington State. Right now, it's kind of in that pilot program point where it will give you real-time trail and recreational data, at least through the spring and the summer of this year. Right now, they're focusing their attention in central Washington. They're looking at the counties Kittitas, Grant, Douglas, Chelan, Okanagan, because around this time, and especially leading into summer, lots of people go out and use the land for hiking and other recreational activities. And not everyone wants to be caught in those crowds. And I doubt this is COVID-related, but I think it's more, I'd like to be outside without having a bunch of people around me, which is also quite selfish because nature belongs to everybody.
Yeah, but then you got to fight for like parking and everything down at the bottom of like the trailheads and stuff. So yeah, give me the less cluttered trails just for the parking aspect.
I don't know necessarily how this works right now. I'm assuming this is really the long game because for it to have real-time data, it has to be tracking your location via your phone, which presumably means you have to actually download the app. But let's go in a world in which everyone has the app. At least all the hikers have the app.
Yeah, what a good app.
It's a great, 5 stars. So what if they sell any of my material? It doesn't matter. Sell away all my info. Just get me onto a clear trail. Won't this just lead to more previously empty trails getting populated with lots of people?
Well, it's going to spread out. It's not like we're increasing.
Will it, though?
Yeah, we're not.
Will it? Here's the deal. Let's say I'm on trail A.
Okay.
And it is packed. I don't like it. Fire up the app. It tells me go to trail B. Well, everybody else who's in the exact same position will say that.
So
they'll all go to trail B.
So all the people who are mad about the clutter
trail
on trail A
will be empty.
Okay. So just go to the empty one.
But then
one.
When you're on B, they're all going to be, you'll be like, it's crowded here too. And then you're going to look at that and be like, go to trail A. Like, I was just at trail A. Shut up, idiot. Go to trail A. All the idiots decided to go to trail B. But that message is getting sent to everybody. It's a nonstop cycle.
You know when like you're driving somewhere? Oh, wait, you don't drive. Sorry.
I don't drive.
Okay, so when you're going somewhere on like Waze and it's like, hey, this route's this much shorter. You're one of like few cars that goes and does that actually. Everyone else is like, I'm just going to sit here and suffer through
this. How many apps for the hiking community do this? Probably few, if any. Probably none.
Sure.
Now with Waze, you are competing against a whole bunch of different apps and everyone's doing the same thing now. You'll notice that Waze and Google Maps don't give you that much to do anymore other than suffer through the traffic. It'll just tell you how long it takes.
Yes.
Because everyone is now on the app and everyone is doing what it recommends. There's only so many places that you can go to avoid traffic on a freeway. There's only so many roads you can travel. And for hiking, there's only so many trails you can go on. So at some point, it's going to be self-defeating. I don't know when that is.
I think the people will disperse evenly. The people who don't care about the crowd will stay on trail A. The people who do care will go over to the less cluttered trail B, and then it'll even itself out.
Who wants to be on a crowded trail?
I don't know. People who don't mind seeing
lonely
people and saying, hey, hi,
lonely people.
Every
yeah,
30 seconds when you pass somebody going
hi
the other way.
Hey, why are you saying hey? What are we supposed to do?
And then there's the one guy who has to make a joke like, oh, you're almost there.
Yeah, it's like, shut up. I know I'm almost there. I'm looking at the map on my app, dummy.
Hikers are awful.
I hate outside. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Big picture.
So maybe the Washington Department of Children, Youth, and Family Services, the DCYF, maybe they've just been so focused on getting woke that they stopped paying attention to the foster care kids that they're supposed to be protecting. Because we found out, courtesy of King 5, that now the state is investigating some truly horrendous allegations of abuse and mistreatment. You've got kids who are already traumatized, who are in this system. Mentally, sometimes physically, sometimes both. Abused. Going into a system that is supposed to protect them. That's supposed to have their backs. But instead, according to a whistleblower complaint that led to a bigger investigation, according to King 5, some employees, some social workers, all those heroes that we're constantly told about, were withholding some basic necessities like, oh, say, a bed, to force kids to comply with what they were asking of them. Now, according to King 5, some of the social workers said their bosses had encouraged them to use psychological tactics in order to make the kids even more miserable than they already were. It included blasting air conditioning, rolling down the windows, or keeping youth awake all night long. Where were they that you could, quote unquote, roll down a window or blast air conditioning? That's a weird way to talk about kids who are just trying to sleep. Oh, they were put in cars. Because according to this report, some of the supervisors of this agency had allegedly instructed social workers to make foster care kids sleep in quote unquote uncomfortable places, like in the cars of the social workers, on office floors for the agency, or on plastic chairs and cots in the lobbies of offices. Baja Kadi is a former social worker with the DCYF. She talked to King 5. She's, of course, disgusted by what she learned was going on.
Like, why are we doing this? Like, just, their life's already hard enough. It was like a scare tactic, almost, to be like, you're going to stay here until you cooperate so that you can go to, like, where you're supposed to go.
I get, especially in the foster care system, I get that you're going to run into some tough cases. There is no doubt about it. It's not easy for some of these kids because of the trauma that they've experienced. They're going to act out. This is not the way to handle it. This actually makes it worse. You are re-traumatizing them. They're supposed to be surrounded by people who care for them. They don't think anyone cares for them. And you just proved it. This is despicable. But thankfully, the Washington Office of Family and Children's Ombuds is doing an investigation.
I find it credible, based on your report, and frankly, deplorable, completely unacceptable.
That's Patrick Dowd. He's the director of the Watchdog Group, and he tells King 5 that he's going to get to the bottom of this.
But what is particularly concerning about your report is reports that department staff were withholding basic necessities from children.
We're told all the time by the woke scolds in Washington's different agencies, including DCYF, that they care about kids, that they have the best interests in mind, that all of their social justice policies are for just that, social justice, correcting an injustice. This is about, what's the code word of 2021?
Equity.
It is about equity. and foster care kids are disproportionately minorities. Black, Latino. That's a huge demographical portion of those who are in foster care of all ages. And so the woke agency of Washington State, this woke department, is mistreating some of these kids according to the allegations. And it doesn't sound like they're all that concerned, because according to King 5, when they originally tried to get an interview or just some answers to some basic questions about what had happened, didn't get a response. Didn't actually get a response. And yet, because I remember covering this particular agency a few months ago, and it turns out it was actually March of this year, they said the concept of race is meant to oppress. In their trainings, in their pamphlets, this is a fully woke organization. They're all down with the institutionalized oppression that needs to be dismantled. Race is a concept created by white supremacists. What do you call it when your actual institution is quite literally oppressing black and brown kids? What do we call that? Don't tell me ironic, DCYF. What do we call that? We already know you're hypocrites because you don't treat Asians the same as you do black and Latino kids, because Asians as a whole do too well for you to consider them minorities. It's your bit of racism. But for an organization that's all about equitable outcomes, do you think those kids are going to have an equitable outcome? Forced to sleep in the Chevy that your social worker has? And if it's coming from the bosses, if that's true, isn't that institutionalizing abuse? Isn't that oppression that's been institutionalized? Who runs DCYF, a new agency that was created in the last few years? Oh, Democrats. Who's the secretary reporting to? Oh, Jay Inslee. And yet it seems like no one really cares about this. Have you heard the story outside of King 5?
No, just King 5.
Yeah. Weird is that? How weird is that? We stand against institutionalized oppression, except if we're doing the oppressing. Then we're all about it. Then we're leaning in. Yeah, thank you, DCYF. Woke scolds. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Ranch Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at that, 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. This is the part of the show where we completely ignore stories coming out of Seattle, and instead we focus all of our attention on the communities you live in and care about most. And we start in Puyallup because they just started to push yet again a nearly $90 million bond for a new public safety building that will house a police station, a courtroom, and some other offices. Now, the current building is old. The current building is breaking down. And so the city has in front of it two options, two bond options. They can either do a 25-year loan or a 20-year loan. Now they're just trying to figure out what are they going to put in front of voters in Puyallup. And I think this debate says so much about certain kinds of politicians who maybe don't understand where it is they live. They spend a lot of extra time trying to maneuver out of just being honest with the price tag and doing what is in the best interest of the community, not necessarily what's in the best interest of one particular loan passing or not. I think there's a little bit of a nuance to this conversation. Because you have some folks who say, let's do a 25-year bond, because it means your property taxes will be lower, generally, year to year, versus a 20-year loan. Meaning, on average, even though it's going to last 25 years, on average, based on the median home price, a property owner would pay $239 a year versus $271 a year if we go with a 25-year bond. And then the proponents say that means this will have a little bit easier of a time passing because it's less than the other number. Okay. But then you've got the other folks who say, go with the 20-year loan because you're going to save $11 million in interest by going with the 25-year loan, or the 20-year loan. Why would we spend an extra $11 million that we don't need to? This isn't our money. This is their money. To me, this seems really, really obvious. You go with the 20-year loan. It is a cost savings in the long run, which isn't only going to be better for everyone, but it's just the smarter move. Yeah, with the other one, you save $30 a month. Oh, wow. But generally, the people who live in Puyallup, these are not folks who come to Puyallup for like a year and then they leave. These are people who have a tendency to live there for a long time. That's where they live. They've set up a home. They're setting up their family. That's where they're going to stay for the long run. So the average person is going to stay there, if they're already there, for almost a lifetime, if not their lifetime. You think 5 years at the end of this is going to make that much of a difference? It's not. It's not. The cost of living in Puyallup is already low, at least in the context of everywhere else. Now, are there competing taxes and fees that the council and the city and the constituency passed that start to add up? Probably. I just don't know what that is. I don't know what that is. Although this should serve as a reminder that every single time you pass an increase in a property tax, even if it's just a dollar for every $1,000 in assessed value, or we're just raising a quarter of a penny of the sales tax is going to go to X, Y, and Z. Okay, well, all of that ends up adding up, which could then sink a proposal like this. But $30 a year is not going to satisfy this. It's not going to sink. It's not going to push one over. So you go with the one that saves $11 million. Why are we arguing about this?
Seems simple enough.
It really does. Oh, people won't pass it if they learn that they had the option of going short. Like, what is your argument? If you're only going to present one, that's the context. Most people don't know you were picking between two different bonds. It doesn't make any sense. Meanwhile, speaking of not making any sense, I have not been invited yet to the Edmonds Parade on July 4th, which seems weird because everyone feigned all this excitement that not only does the city of Edmonds residents get their fireworks, which are stupid, all fireworks are, not specifically the Edmonds fireworks, although I've never seen the Edmonds fireworks. They could be particularly bad.
Maybe these are the ones that get you.
No, they won't be.
Oh, okay.
But they were all like, yay, we get a parade. And I also remember saying, the parades are also stupid. Arguably, they're worse than the fireworks. Okay, fine. But everyone was pretending to be excited. This is returning to life as we know it. It might not happen, according to the Everett Herald, because not enough people signed up to take part in the actual parade. Not enough people to march or get in the little floats. And so they say they have to get up to 40 entries by a week from today, so next Monday. Now, if you're saying, well, that might not that be that bad. I mean, what if they're at like 39? They're not.
What are they at?
15. So that's quite the climb to get to 40. And are they really the Chamber of Edmonds? They're going to say no if they get to 39?
I hope so. I kind of hope so.
I kind of want that too, if I'm being honest.
Why don't they just lean in the other way and say, let's make a Guinness World Record of the shortest parade ever, and they knock off a few of those 15, make it like 9 cars?
Well, what counts as a parade then?
I guess that's
right. How do you define a parade?
Just one car driving
by. That's
with...
just sad. So the Edmonds Chamber of Commerce says they're encouraging everyone from religious groups to sports teams to neighborhood groups and nonprofits to register. I will do it and do a, I'm not going to walk, so let's be clear. I will do my radio show live or taped, depending on the time of day and my interest level at the time. I will do it from a float if someone else is either pushing or driving the float. I've never done a parade monologue before. I've done monologues about parades. And so I thought I would be very meta, where I would do a monologue about a parade. And it would be, this is a pathetic parade.
So if we got you like a flatbed truck.
Someone else has to do all the work. I'm simply saying I will show up and I will perform in this parade. But someone else has to do all of the setup, all of the day of preparations. You have to get the rental for the speakers or whatever they allow you to do on the float. All I will do, and I mean literally, all I will do is show up, barely make eye contact with you, get on the float, start to talk as we drive, and as soon as we're done, I'm out. But it could be fun.
Is that how you want to spend your 4th of July? Isn't this
I'm not
the 4th
even
of July?
Never mind, I'm not in town.
Yeah, what are you doing? You're trying to book yourself.
I'll cancel my vacation for that day, and I'll just fly out that night. Because I'm leaving,
It's a Monday.
No, I'm leaving on the 2nd. I'll come back on the 4th just for this. I won't, but you should do all the work anyway.
So you want somebody to do all this work to get ready for
Peyton
you? They say
will show up.
Or, what am I going to do?
Or, no! Scratch all that. I am in town. But out of respect for the last year that we had, one might call it, I'm paying homage to COVID. Set up an iPad and I'll Skype in from my home in Seattle.
Oh, nice.
Not from Vegas or Dallas. I will Skype in and do the show that way. And it'll be it'll be in respect to COVID.
Okay.
For the people who can't show up because they're still scared to go outside.
This could really work. We set up some speakers and you just give your monologue while you could just tape this in advance.
Shut up.
Oh, that's what you were going
Shut
for?
Up,
and you were just going to put like a little Skype thing in the corner?
We'll record it after the show. We'll just send them the file.
Okay.
I think that could be fun.
Yeah. Somebody set up a Jason Rantz float.
Can they do that? Because they don't say, I mean, do you have to live in Edmonds? Do you actually have to have a connection to Edmonds? We did a Freedom Series in Edmonds once.
We talk about Edmonds on the radio. I feel like we should be invited.
I mean, I think your mayor is a joke and an embarrassment. So don't put me on the float, like, behind him. Because that monologue is going to be, you better hope it's not live.
Oh, that would be fun, though.
Because that monologue is just going to be trolling him the entire time.
We would get punchy rants live and in the flesh. Well, I guess on video.
Constantly saying, hey, Mike Nelson, turn around. And then he turns around. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm doing a radio show. Stop distracting me. Like, I'll just do it the entire time. Make him drive or push. That'll be humiliating.
Yeah, a lot of ideas here.
Oh, I've got all the ideas are popping through my head. So if you want to participate in the Edmonds parade, it's not even called the Independence Day parade. They wrote it down and I forgot what it was because it was not related to July 4th. And I'm not down with that. I'm going to call it, you know how I only say the Puyallup Fair?
Yes.
I don't say the Washington State Fair. I'm just going to call it the Edmonds Independence Day Parade.
You also do the same with CenturyLink and the Key Arena. You don't call those things.
But that's because I forgot. Well, Key Arena, I'm not going to stop. It was only because I'm not going to participate in Climate Pledge Arena. Shut up. I'm not taking that pledge. And I'm an environmentalist. I'm not taking that pledge. What do I hate more than anything?
Virtue signaling.
Virtue signaling. And that's a literal virtue signal. It's literally a virtue signal. I like this idea. So go ahead and sign me up. Go to the Edmonds, just Google Edmonds Chamber of Commerce.
And if you're in Edmonds and have like a team or something, sign up for this so that the parade happens. Come on, Jason.
Just remember, for my activism, fireworks in general would no longer exist
in Marysville.
In Snohomish County.
It was Marysville.
Well, Marysville is in Snohomish County.
I know,
County.
But you didn't save the entire county. You saved
one
city.
I saved the entire county because it only takes one.
Okay, this is a fish story.
It takes
Next is going to be the state,
victory.
Then the West Coast,
no,
and then
not
all
the
of a
state,
sudden Nebraska,
just
you saved their fireworks show.
No, I wouldn't save Nebraska's fireworks show. I only did it because I wanted a park named after me. And if it's a park in Nebraska, okay.
How's that park naming gone for you so far?
I don't know. You know, who was the council member of states?
I had it last week.
1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Send me your text messages. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Jeffrey Toobin triumphantly returned to CNN last week after he really, 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 really loved himself during a Zoom meeting. And his colleagues over at the New Yorker saw him really get into it. He's been off the air for something like, what, 7-8 months? And a lot of folks wondered if he would ever return. New Yorker fired him. Why would CNN take this guy back? Well, they gave him to, or maybe Allison Camerota requested the interview with him. And it was a very cringeworthy interview.
I feel like we should address what's happened in the months since we've seen you, since some of our viewers may not know what has happened.
No,
so I guess I'll recap. I'll do the honors.
So she's already being really light about it. This is someone who has gone after Fox News for some of the issues at the network in the past. And she's gone after them hard, really hard. And yet with Jeffrey Toobin, we'll have some fun with this.
Help yourself.
Okay.
No, she doesn't want to help herself.
In October, you were on a Zoom call with your colleagues from the New Yorker magazine. Everyone took a break for several minutes, during which time you were caught masturbating on camera. You were subsequently fired from that job after 27 years of working there.
But we kept you.
And you since then have been on leave from CNN. Do I have all that right?
You got it all right. Sad to say.
That you got caught, you're sad to say. So they continue and they got into it. So Joy Behar is defending him. She's defending him.
Oh, she's so dumb.
She is the worst. And it's this really tells you how bad faith some of these folks are. So bad faith. Because there is no one who thinks she would give this level of understanding if it was Rick Santorum. If Rick Santorum was caught doing exactly what Jeffrey Toobin was doing, she would not say this.
He wants to be a better person. He's working at a food bank. I don't see the correlation between needing to engage Mr. Happy and being a bad person. I mean, maybe it causes blindness, but I don't see how it causes you to be a bad person.
No one says he's a bad person. No one. Not for this, at least. What we're saying is it's bad to do it on a work Zoom call, which I think is a meaningful distinction. I think most people would generally take the position that in the minutes between your break, your Zoom meeting, don't do that during your break.
Or like when you're on the clock in general, I don't know.
It's reasonable. I'm not even going to say when you're on the clock. Because you know what? You're now working at home. Okay? If your normal break would be a smoke break out back, and that's your break in your own home or hotel, okay, that's fine, I guess. I don't care. I'm assuming people do that all the time during COVID. However, no one is saying in this case that, oh, he's a bad person because he did it. No, they're saying he should not have done it. He was caught in the same way that you would fire someone if he was in the office and he did this, but he thought his door was locked and someone walked in. That person would get fired in a heartbeat. 100%. That person that day would get fired. Someone will have to go in and disinfect the office, and then they would clean it out. But he would get fired in a heartbeat if it happened in the office. But because it happened in a hotel room, we give him a pass, or his house, we give him a pass.
Because that would be everybody in the world, practically, would be a bad person for doing what he was doing.
During a Zoom meeting, everybody... Every man and woman has done that during a Zoom call?
Who among us, Jason?
Who among us hasn't taken time out? No!
At home, alone, in their house.
He wasn't alone. He was on a Zoom call. You're not alone at that point. This isn't a porn webcam site. This isn't OnlyFans. Come on. That was the only one I could think of. What are the other ones? It was a test. You knew.
I don't know other ones.
Liar, you had a whole bunch in your head.
He didn't know the thing was running, of course, so we forgive him that. I'm not judging the guy. I mean, it just shows you how boring these Zoom meetings are, that he couldn't even wait between meetings to get himself involved with himself.
I'm going to try to do comedy here. It's not very good, and it's made worse because I don't have an audience yet, which always laugh at my contrived jokes. She would never, ever, ever in a million years give this level of treatment to a conservative who got caught doing exactly the same thing. Now, if at the end of the day, everyone is being treated the same, I don't care which position you take. I certainly believe that there is room for moving on and accepting an apology. In this case, probably wouldn't have done it. Not in a world where CNN is going over and over and overboard talking about the Me Too movement and how women are not being respected. In fact, the weird thing is, as she's defending Jeffrey Toobin and defending CNN effectively for keeping him on the job, she then goes after CNN.
No, I mean, with all the men in CNN's payroll, they had to give it to poor Allison Camerota. She didn't deserve that. It was embarrassing and uncomfortable and something manipulative, I thought.
I don't know if it's manipulative, but isn't it sexist for her to believe that, number one, Allison Camerota is not capable of doing this, and number two, she didn't ask for it? What if she asked for? I would want that interview. I would do that interview in a heartbeat. It'd be more than what time she spent on it, that's for sure. We're not talking about anything legal. We're talking all about what you just did to yourself. And on the Chiron self-love, a Jeffrey Toobin story. I'm leaning in. I mean, not leaning in that close, because God knows what's going on underneath that desk. 1-800-465. That I'm social distancing. 1-800-465-8770. Send me your text messages.